Welcome, friends. This is James Corbett, and you're tuned into CorbettReport.com on the 14th day of November 2011. And I'm back this week on time, this time with our regular Monday night guest, Bob Chapman of the International Forecaster at intforecaster.com. Bob Chapman, thank you so much for taking time out of your early Monday morning to join us again today.
Well, I love early Monday morning because I go to bed at 8:30 in the evening and make sure that I'm chipper for Monday because I have about 9 programs on Monday. And so I better be good. And I get rid of my cold, I think. I hope it doesn't come back. And that dragged on me all last week, but I didn't miss much.
Well, I certainly hope you're over the worst of it, and I can't believe how much work you do. So again, thank you for taking the time. But let's get into this week's conversation, and I don't know what you want to start out with tonight. There's so much going on in the world, but what's on your mind right now?
Well, let's dissect what's going on in Europe. And I told the German government 2 years ago that the bill would be about $4 trillion for the 5 PIIGS, pigs as they're called, and you can throw in Brussels for good measure. They can't seem to put a government together. You talk about balkanization. You know, the Flemish live in the north of the country, and in the south are the Walloons. They speak two entirely different languages, and so they don't get along all that well. But anyway, that apart, what we see is, I think, finally a realization. About 2 months ago, I changed my estimate from $4 to $6 trillion, what it would cost to bail out those 6 recalcitrant countries. And lo and behold, Boston, whatever it's called, we'll call it Boston Predictions, they come out and they're talking about bigger numbers. They're talking 6 trillion euros, which is $8.1 trillion, which is 2 trillion above my highest estimate. Now, I think what's happened, and I made that estimate most of it 2 years ago, and when I made my change from 4 to 6 trillion, what happened was that the German government changed theirs from 1 to 3.5 trillion. I don't think they dared go to the real number, you know, for political reasons. Be as it may, the bankers, Illuminis, like the Federal Reserve and the Bank of England and so on, they've come to the realization that you really can't bail that group out. The figure for Italy alone is $3.5 trillion, and they're in trouble. And we also have Spain, who is quite large as well, that would take it up another $2 trillion, and then you have the others. So I think $6 trillion is a safe estimate and conservative. And they can't bail them out. I mean, they would have to print $6 trillion and give it to them, essentially. That's what it amounts to. And so they throw it in the towel. And what they're going to do, this would be the EU, which includes the Eurozone. There's 27 members of the European Union, of which only 17 belong to the Eurozone. The rest still have their own currencies. And that includes England as well in that European Union group. And, excuse me. And what's next is they're going to try to pass changes to the Constitution, which they left out, if you can believe this. I mean, here they put all this stuff together over years, and they never have any provision. They never had, nor they do now, nor do they now, any provision for somebody to leave. I mean, it doesn't have to be that they're broke. They might say, well, I don't like the way Germany's doing this and France is doing that, so our country wants to leave. Well, you wouldn't have had that option. So they're going to have to make that option. Why? Because they want to cut them loose. They want to get rid of the problems. Now, that's a two-sided sword. The first side is they all go broke. They all default. They all have to go into austerity. They all go into depression. But they have to expect that, you know, the sins have to be paid for, if you want to call them that. And figuratively, I think that'll stand. But anyway, but the flip side of that is if these countries aren't doing anything within their own countries, how can they buy our products? Is what the other, let's see, 21 are saying to themselves, 21 nations. Does the six drop out? Which is, this is the intention, the six drop out. Now, they'd like to save Italy, but they can't do it. Who's going to put up the money? It just isn't going to happen. And, you know, you have to live in Europe and speak the languages of these countries and to understand the people, to understand the culture that they live among. I mean, you find five or six different cultures in one country. It's tribal. It's anthropological. And so in the South, the response has been historically, oh, let's see what it looks like next week or next month or next year. And they're not hard and fast on the rules where you go to Northern Europe, they are. And so there's no commonality of interest in economics, finance, business, and many, many other things, which I won't get into. It was an unnatural association. And I've called it that for the last 14 years or whatever it is that I've been writing about it. And I said it would be a failure from the very beginning, and I was right, because that's what's happening right now. So they want to, for openers, cut them loose. That means that all the banks in the nations being cut loose, as well as other banks in other countries, are going to go upside down. Now, they have decided it is better to spend this money that they're going to have to dish out. They'll print it, you know, have the printing presses going all night, all week, and so on. And they have decided to ring fence, as I call it, or circle the wagons is what I call it. And each country is going to take care of their own banking systems, which is really the last thing they should do. But you see, they have a vested interest. Their power all springs from the banking community because the bankers have all the money. Even though they're broke right now, they still have the power. And that money for years has come from them to the politicians, transnational corporations, Wall Street, City of London. And all that power is vested in that area. And so the people in government are being told, look, the banks are saying this. Let's say it's Lord Rothschild. He's saying, look, if the banks go in, you're all screwed. We're out of business, you're out of business, and it's chaos. So save us. Well, that's the wrong thing to do. Because all we're doing is perpetuating in power a group of criminals. A group of criminals, that's what they are. Because the things that they do are good for them, but they don't care one whit about the people in their country or adjoining countries for that matter. And so they're doing what they're doing for their own gratification. And that is the seat of power internationally, not only in the countries that they're in, but many of these banking conglomerates like HSBC and JP Morgan Chase and Goldman Sachs and Deutsche Bank have branches all over the world. I mean, you can drop in any city and find one of their banks usually. So the point here is going back to classical economics, and this is not just the Austrian school. This goes back to 2,600 years before the birth of Christ. And that is, when the thing is all messed up, you let it go under. And that's exactly what should have been done 3 years ago, wasn't done for the reasons I just told you. All of these vested interests, and they're going to get forced into it sooner or later, because there's no way they can get out of the mess that they created. And they created it deliberately, which is something I won't go into right now. But the point is this. They're going to save the banks. They're going to cut loose our six countries and any others that can't make it. I mean, can Slovenia make it? And some of the other Eastern European countries? I don't think so. I think you'll lose three or four more. So where you're at then, you lost 10. And they figure that they'll set up this bulwark of a Eurozone with not 17 participants, but maybe 7. Let me tell you something, that's not going to work either, because they don't get along. None of them. In fact, some of them hate each other. And, you know, you always see Sarkozy and Merkel smiling and looking radiant with one another like they were the best of friends, when in fact, well, he's a fascist and she's a communist. So their complex political philosophies don't match. Anyway, that's a conclusion. That's where they think they're headed. It isn't going to happen that way. This problem is not going to go away. It'll be with us for a minimum of 2 years. Now, the flip side of that, looking at the remainder of the world, we haven't heard anything, hardly, about the problems in England, which is bankrupt. Nor have we heard anything about the problems in America, which is bankrupt. And now we have another, we can't call it minor, it's a $120 billion theft, but MF Global has sort of lighted the fire under Wall Street again, and they'll try to keep that in the background as long as they can. What essentially happened is the management in MF Global stole all the money in the accounts of the individual investors in order to bring about the demise of the company. I think they deliberately took it under. Two reasons. J.P. Morgan and Goldman Sachs come in and buy the thing for 25 cents on the dollar, maybe even less. And the other hand, I think they wanted further disruption in the commodity market as well as on other markets undercover. Now, the cover being the problems in Europe and all of the make-believe wars in the Middle East for profit. And believe me, there's big profit there. And, you know, they're changing the leadership. They own everybody over there. I mean, you have to spend time in the Middle East and North Africa to understand that human life has no value. And the only thing that makes any difference is wealth. And it was like that in America, you know, up until maybe 50 to 100 years ago. I mean, that was the only dividing line. I mean, look at the big cities in America, what they were like in the, say, the second part of the 19th century, between 1850 and 1900. I mean, it was every man for himself. And that's changed somewhat. But anyway, getting back to Europe and the United States, that's what's going on generally right now. As far as Italy's concerned, Berlusconi evidently is going to leave. one of his best friends, Umberto Bossi, who runs the Northern League, told him, hey, look, you got to get out of town. Bossi is a fringe fascist, as is Berlusconi. Berlusconi is an Illuminist, and Bossi does not like the Illuminists. I have some great contacts in Italy. The picture which has been painted of Mr. Berlusconi is in part truthful. I must say in his defense, and I don't like the man, that everything has to be balanced. He came into office looking at a dog's breakfast. And he did a decent job carrying everything sideways for 3 years. And I think that his reputation as a party guy and supposedly having participation with young ladies at these parties was overblown. And the reason I say that, a friend of mine in Rome sent me a email on Thursday and told me, you're not going to believe this, but Berlusconi has been impotent for 15 years. So I think that precludes him to a great degree of engaging in the things that he's been accused of. Be as it may, it hasn't looked good in the press. And so he's history. But he's not the problem. There's bigger problems. And the country's broke. They owe $3 or $4 trillion. And there's no place to find it. They have to go bankrupt. And they got a very serious problem in major Italian cities, particularly Rome, with illegal aliens, most of them from North Africa. And they don't know what to do about it. They don't know how to handle it. A very, very bad situation. South of France is similar, not over to Etcombe, but on the other side over the Marseille. And the only thing good there is the bouillabaisse, which is fish soup for the years, those of you who don't know. In Spanish, they call it paella. Anyway, and they don't have a name in German. the situation in Europe is going to be ongoing, and it's going to put upward pressure on gold and silver, downward pressure on stock markets, and extremely downward pressure on interest rates. They're going to continue to move up. You know, you're not going to be able to borrow money. I'll guess. This year, Italy had to raise $231 billion. Next year, it's like $256 billion. It's in my next issue of the IF. The figures are all in there. I just can't remember them all exactly. Anyway, that's how are they going to raise money? They're paying 7% on their paper now. Well, actually, they closed at 6 7/8 last week. But, I mean, the word is it's high. I mean, I think it's 5.3 full basis points above Germany. And we call it the 10-year bund in every issue. So if you take off 5, the Germans are paying like 2.5% for 10-year money. The Italians are paying 7. You can't survive. You can't pay that kind of interest and survive.
So not only can Italy not survive, I think the discrepancy between Germany and Italy gives the lie to the entire idea of the type of economic union that they've tried to shoehorn these different, vastly different economies into. And I think that raises the really other extremely important point that you raised there that is kind of the excluded factor in a lot of economic analysis, but I think really goes to a heart of a lot of this, which is the culture of Europe, the various European countries, and even within the current countries. But I think there's also a kind of cultural war going on between the peoples of Europe and the Eurocrats, the would-be dictators who are trying to shoehorn these different countries into this makeshift ad hoc union. And I think that really is where we can define the crux of the problem, this type of gang culture that's really trying to subdue and subjugate all of these various different cultures under their leadership. And I think you're right. I think it is doomed to fail, but I think it's going to be one hell of a fight.
Well, we're in the middle of it right now, and that's why, you know, liberal arts is so important at university. A lot of people poo-poo it, but you understand how other people live. And if you're going to do business in a country other than the United States and you're a U.S. citizen, you'd best go to other countries and live there to find out what these people are thinking. I mean, how can you effectively top grade do business, say, in Germany, unless you speak their language? They all speak English. That doesn't make any difference. You have to speak their language in order to understand their culture, and you have to study their culture. This is an unnatural association, and I hope every writer in the world picks it up. I've only seen one do it, but that's exactly what it is. It's a profundity. We're looking at something that can't happen. I mean, we're looking about trying to change 6, 7, 8, 9, 10,000 years of culture. Can't do it. The people in the Illuminati got their heads screwed on backwards. They're crazy. I mean, who would ever attempt to do such a thing in the first place? Who would be on both sides of almost every war for the past 10,000 years? Or more nearly just the last 1,000 years is good enough. Normal people don't do those kind of things, run around hacking other people's heads off. It's always the same group of people and their lust for power and control, subjugation, enslavement. At least the cons, when they swept westward over Europe, everybody they captured, they cut their heads off. Their thought was, well, they can never fight against us again, and they can't breed more of these jerks that we have to come periodically and kill. I mean, that's another way of looking at it. But the point is that you can't have a United States of Europe. You can't have a European Union. And it will fall asunder. And in that process, all these people who are involved in this are all going to be exposed for what they've done. And this time, no more Mr. Nice Guy. We're going to try them, put them in jail, relieve them of their ill-begotten fortunes, and those who have created treason, they will be executed. And it's the only way you can gain control back for the people. And not the people are no panacea, mind you. But you've got to strike a balance between power and the people. And that's what America's had for many, many years. Although many of the wars that they've had are ill-begotten, particularly in this last century. But that's not the point. The point is we must find balance so that people can live among one another without getting exterminated or enslaved.
Well, that is true, and perhaps the most remarkable point about that whole thought is the idea that the younger generation, including myself, tend to think of that almost as something that you would only read in history books, that type of revolutionary fervor could never really happen again. And I think we're starting to see the beginnings of that even in North America, where people have been complacent and lulled into a false sense of complacency for a number of generations now. But it is getting to that historical moment again. And it's important to understand that this is something that has played itself out time after time after time throughout history as people overthrow their tyrannical leaders. And it can be done, and it has been done, and it will likely be done again.
And there's a price to pay. And people always have to keep that in mind. The core of the reaction to what's going on in the world will come in each country from people immediately that are 18 to 35. But the real action will get going when the 35 to 60-year-olds start to say, we've had enough. And there's going to be major changes. And these people who are trying to control us, they are going to lose. There's absolutely no question. If you look at it from the perspective that I do, I'm a student of history. This has happened over and over again. It's nothing new. You just have to understand how it happened before and what you can do about it. And most people just don't even study history. I mean, we look at the high schools today, 60% approximately that go into the ninth grade don't graduate. And you know, that's true in every country. You talk about a bunch of zombies. But when it comes to eating and meeting, they have to do what they have to do. And my next program's sending me a message here. Anyway, I think you're going to now see a switch to more notorious information and things that are happening in America than have for the last year, but mostly in the last 6 months, because Europe has taken front stage, and then we've had all the revolutions in Eastern Europe bought and paid for by the United States government and the British government. And municipal problems are going to start coming to the surface. We only had about 10 municipalities go bankrupt this past year as they ran out of money that was being lent to them by the federal government. The states are in the same position. And I think what you're going to see is 20, 30, 40, 50 municipalities go down this coming year. The number I don't know. It's a guess at the moment. I'd have to talk to Whitney, that lady who projects. She does banks. She knows better than I do. She said 100 would go under this year, and they didn't, but she didn't figure that the government would support them financially. But anyway, that's coming. And you're going to have more financial exposures in different sectors. I think the CME, which is the owner of the COMEX, has got some serious, serious problems. And so does it the CFTC. My sources in New York have told me that Gary Gensler, who is the assistant to John Corzine at Goldman Sachs, was involved in this thing. Mary Shapiro at the SEC knew what was going on. But they didn't know just what was going on. They were involved in hiding the fact of what was going on. Whether this will ever come out will remain to be seen. And Daley, who just quit his job as advisor to the president, he was involved in it as well, as was J.P. Morgan Chase right up to their eyeballs, and Goldman Sachs from behind the scenes. So
wait, a Daley involved in fraud and corruption?
News coming out.
A Daley involved in fraud and corruption? No way.
Oh, of course not.
Yes, well... Well,
Chicago crime families.
Well, we laugh about it, but it's obviously nothing to laugh about. And of course, Gary Gensler, of course, at the head of the CFTC, in charge of investigating all these frauds, and very much a player in them. So what do we do in that situation?
Well, you know, they investigated the Silver situation for 3 years. He was there two of those 3 years, and they deliberately delayed it. And then when they announced it, they came up with nothing. And even Bart Chilton, who was on the panel, he is an appointed member, and they're all appointed, incidentally, he said, this is crime. He said, the market is rigged. And they still won't do anything about it because they don't think anybody's listening to Bart Chilton. Well, we talk about him all the time, and so do other newsletters that follow the precious metals markets. But what is... terrifying here, I think that's the right word to use, is the fact that it's unbridled thievery by the major banks. They just do anything they want. It's not only in there, but it's a lot of other places too. But they just refuse to do anything with the criminals. I was watching an interview this morning with Warren Buffett, And he said that the penalties for executing these sort of things should be stiffer. Well, usually they fine the person after the company has gone under because the company can't pay his bill for him because they're bankrupt. And in this process, the evildoer is fined. Well, if they got $1 billion, well, we'll take Michael Milken. He had $3 billion. They fined him $1 billion. He spent a year and a half in the can. And they come out and know he's a hero. I mean, what kind of sick thinking is that? And the government was happy they got $1 billion they wouldn't have had otherwise. I mean, you got to follow the money in these things. And so you've got another bowl of putrid fish, and you got to deal with it. And it's going to be all over the news in this coming year. And there'll be other things to add in along with the municipalities and the unsuccessful 12-member enabling super congressional panel that was going to find out how we're going to handle this these austerity measures of $1.3 trillion over the next 10 years. Give me a break. Give me a break.
Give us a break. Absolutely. Well, you've got another bowl of putrid fish and you got to deal with it. That would make one excellent demotivational poster. But on that note, I mean, we have covered, I suppose, a little bit from Europe, obviously, but also from America. Obviously, as you say, I think the European struggles over the last several months have been knocking a lot of other things off of the front page and out of our out of sight, out of mind. So is there anything else going on around the world that you think is potentially interesting that might have been falling under people's radars?
Well, you know, we cover all over the world, and I mean, you've probably got as good a handle as anybody on what's going to happen with Japan and Fukushima and the terrible damage that's been done. And, you know, where is it all going to lead? I mean, are people going to be able to live in that section of Japan because of those nuclear reactors that have gone down, so to speak?
It's not only that, I think. Now we have other concerns, including the tsunami debris, which is being shipped around the country now for incineration and storage and disposal in various municipalities around the country. And of course, they're radioactive. So there's some pretense that there's some kind of radiation scanning going on with the debris that's arriving to make sure that there's nothing that's going to be damaging to human health. But I think we all know how much we can rely on government figures for that sort of thing. And then there's the other, I think, major concern for people living in Japan, which is the food supply and really establishing where all of these different foods are coming from and to what extent they might be contaminated. And there have been some scandals with that, including some fishermen recently in the Fukushima area who've decided to stop selling fish because although the government says it's safe and there's hardly detectable levels of radiation, some fishermen took it upon themselves to do their own calculations from TEPCO's own radiation readings and discovered that it's a lot higher than the government is saying. So they've actually voluntarily decided to stop selling fish because they didn't want to murder people, which was the way they phrased it. So some very serious things happening. And I think you're right. It's only going to continue to unfold. And I think they can only keep the cork on that bottle for so long before the genie will pop out on it. And I just hope that that people are ready for that when it comes and understand what's happening here. But I think you're right.
Well,
I think
do you
for
think
Fukushima,
there's a possibility that Japan will have to be abandoned as a place to live?
I would certainly hope that it would not come to that. I certainly don't think that there's the need to take it to that level right now, but certainly if there's no way to properly contain what's going on there, and there's every indication that there's all sorts of things going on there, including potential recriticality that can't be contained, if that's the case, then who knows what time frame or what time scale we're looking at. But certainly, I think at least that area of the island becoming uninhabitable is a very, very real possibility if things continue the way they're going.
What a tragedy. And then they covered it out. Not only they, but the Americans and everybody else did, too. I mean, that debris is all over the western United States and western Canada. And it could, I'm sure, go further than that. And
absolutely. And in fact, there's been an extremely important expose recently about the radiation monitoring network, RadNet, that was doing extra testing in the wake of the disaster, which was the nuclear industry apparently seemed to be able to close that down and get it to go back to just regular radiation monitoring, quote unquote. So basically, the nuclear industry itself is dictating what the government is testing and what they're not testing. So that's obviously cause for alarm.
Sure it is. The main player is General Electric. They're the ones that have built many, many of those reactors that are now causing these problems. You know, your people look down their nose at the Russians screwing up at Chernobyl. Hey, wait a minute. They're not the only ones that did. And, you know, what was GE thinking when they made these kind of reactors? Why didn't they go to thorium breeding reactors? There's a lot of questions that have encompassed the last 50 years. And it's just another case of not caring about the outcome, just the profit. And it's got to stop. I mean, people don't have to go that far to make money or make extra money or whatever. I mean, can't we all make a decent profit from one another and live in happiness? I mean, anybody who's ever seen the results of radiation or the results of warfare itself, you don't ever want to visit it again. I mean, why is it that veterans of all armies who come back from wars don't want to talk about it? They don't like what's happening to them in their dreams when all of these things come back and the horrible things that they've seen. And so it isn't worth it. And I think people just, they really got to understand this. And we've got to, it's worldwide, we've got to get rid of leadership that sanctions these sort of horrible things. I mean, the President of the United States says, well, let's it's okay to go over and occupy Syria and get rid of that bad guy in there. And the Arab League, like tame donkeys, say that we're against what Syria is doing. Well, anybody would be against what Syria is doing. That's not the point. The point is, this thing was all conjured up in Whitehall and in Washington. That's what the point is. These wars are for political, geopolitical positioning and for looting. I mean, look at the looting that they're going to do in Libya, and they just did in Iraq. Think about it, people. This is what it's all about. Nobody else wants to talk about it. Well, I do. I think it stinks. And I don't care what political party you come from. You should be concerned about it. Do you want your children, your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren to live, to survive? Well, if a lot of these people have their way, they won't. Because at the very best, they want to get rid of 60% of the population in the world. What kind of creatures are these people? How can they think such things about humanity?
I think that is the key question, because there a lot of people just have a difficult time getting their head around the idea that there are people that are willing to enslave and subject others to the most unspeakable conditions just for their own personal power and profit and the furthering of their own family lines at the expense of others. And until we get our heads around that concept, I think, unfortunately, we will always be bested by those who would seek to rule over us. And I think an important part of that is opening our minds to the information that's coming out on a weekly basis from the International Forecaster. So tell us a little bit about the newsletter.
The forecast is about business, finance, economics, social and political issues all over the world. We publish on Wednesday and Saturdays by email, runs around 35 or 40 pages each time. We have a hard copy that goes out twice a month for those who are not on the internet. And everything that you need to know every week is in that publication. You can get a free introductory copy by going to theinternationalforecaster.com. The International, ForeCaster.com. Or you can go to www.intforecaster.com. Intforecaster.com. For those of you who would like to ask a question, and we answer everyone, get a copy of the publication either, or get a copy of our latest recommendations in gold and silver shares. All you have to do is email us. And that address is Bob, B-O-B, at intforecaster.com. Bob at intforecaster.com. And for those of you who would like to call toll-free, that address is, that phone number is 877-479-8178. You can get any of the copy there. And for those of you who would like to become subscribers, they have a special deal there where if you would like to get a free one-year subscription, they have an offering that they're making in regard to that. So if you want to become a subscriber, that deal that they're offering is really terrific.
Excellent. Well, another very, very serious conversation, but I'm glad that we're able to have this. And I think it's so important to be trying to bring this information to the people who really do need it out there to understand what's happening in the world around them. So once again, my hat's off to you for all of the work that you're doing, helping to spread this information and the tireless efforts that you do doing that. And I know that you have many, many more programs to do today, so I will stop hogging your valuable time. But thank you once again for your time, and I'm looking forward to next week.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you all for listening. It's my pleasure.